Thank you, Patricia, for that extremely kind introduction. I would also like to thank Lisa Smolian for organizing today's event. And thank you all for being here today. It is such a treat to see so many familiar faces in the audience. And I'm truly delighted to have this opportunity to present my current thinking about a work I had a chance to view last year in Japan, thanks to the generous funding of the Mary Albertson Faculty Fellowship. This research is part of my manuscript project, which examines the visual culture of Japanese court poetry, or waka, a highly condensed poetic form of 31 syllables in length. The period I work on is the 16th to the 17th century, nearly a millennium into the history of Japanese court poetry and its artifacts. I examine the ways in which artifacts produced during this time served to promote this cultural legacy as potent symbols of cultivation and status. As a treasured institution, court poetry was integral to the identity of the imperial court, but also of premium concern to the educated elite, including warriors and wealthy commoners who wished to be considered learned and to partake in this cultural institution. I am increasingly interested in the ways in which material sites of poetic inscription, I'm showing you a poem sheet on the screen, such as folding screens, hand scroll poetry sheets, and lacquer writing boxes, contribute to the visual culture of court poetry by asserting its materiality and directing the inscription of word on an image. The object of my focus today, a pair of screens representing the 36 iconic sages of court poetry, exemplified such an example in which an age-old iconographic tradition of poet portraiture in existence since the 12th century is reimagined in a new medium. To put this in a material context, on the top right, I'm showing the earliest known example from the early 13th century, a set of hand scrolls which are now cut up and remounted as individual portraits. On the top left is an example of 36 poet portraiture on the wooden plank, a practice that began in the 15th century. And you will be able to see this in person in the Japanese art galleries at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Thanks to the magic of digital imaging, the objects appear the same size, but the screens measure 5.5 feet tall, so in reality, the difference in scale is something like this. And here's an image of with a human body next to it to show you that the 36 poets are almost life-size. Not quite, but almost. This pair of screens is the earliest extant example that represents the 36 poets in this format, and it is believed that the calligrapher of this work, Konoe Nobutada, his dates are 1571 to 1618, played a role in bringing the 36 poets to the big screen. A courtier, Nobutada was a central figure of the imperial court at the turn of the 17th century, and he was an elite as they come. He was as elite as they come, born to one of the five highest-ranking aristocratic families. He also made a name for himself with his distinct style of calligraphy, and he is best remembered for his bold inscriptions directly on the folding screen surface, as seen on the screen below. The direct inscription on the screen surface is a new practice that is considered to have emerged from Nobutada's milieu, and he is celebrated as its unrivaled practitioner. This is to give you a sense of how radical this direct inscription was. It's a truly radical departure from the convention of inscribing poetry on the screen format, which was usually done within a poem sheet or a poem square, which I'm showing you on the screen on the top. This screen is then monumental in two regards, in its large-scale rendering of the 36 poets and in its equally large-scale execution of calligraphy. What has also caught scholarly attention is the distinctive placement of the female poets, which I'll get to in a moment. What I'm offering today is the first in-depth study on the set of screens, and I will build on the insights of previous scholars who have, perhaps due to the lack of historical documentation on this work, only cautiously placed it within the general culture milieu of Nobutada, our calligrapher. My inquiry into the screens began with the fundamental question, why the screen? As previous scholars have noted, the pair of screens is an impressive work of painting and calligraphy, and the pair demonstrates a new chapter in the representational history of the 36 poets with its selection of the screen format. But the screens are also a material object made for a particular use context. The sheer physical presence of the screens was such that I had to view them in separate rooms of the private collector's residence. This is why you see two rooms here. And that prompted me to think about what kind of setting that would have allowed the two halves to be placed side by side in a manner that would make the most compositional sense, as I'm showing you here. It's a completely different visual experience from looking at a reproduction of these screens in a book. The screen is an architectonic format that involves the actual space in which it is placed. And indeed, as I sat before these poets, there was a compelling sensation of my occupying the same space as the poets, to really be in their presence. This sensation was also enhanced by the materiality of the densely patterned and textured robes worn by the poets. This work was clearly an expensive, elaborate commission, featuring the calligraphy of one of the most celebrated courtier calligraphers of the time. What then prompted such an extensive project, this monumental rendering? I took as a challenge to dig up the context that motivated the representation of the 36 poets on the screen format. Based on historical documents and a consideration of how actual poetry contests were conducted at the time, I will offer a new interpretation today. My first clue came by the way of Nobutada's calligraphy. The calligraphic style allows us to place the screen during the first 14 years of the 17th century, during the final years of Nobutada's life, when he brushed in this highly unique, mature style. These years also coincide with a particularly charged moment in the political landscape of Japan at the time, when important transitions of power took place. A new warrior regime is established in Edo, which is now Tokyo, in 1603. Without Edo, there will be no Tokyo. At the imperial court in Kyoto, where it has been located since 794, Nobutada's very own nephew ascends to the throne as the emperor in 1611. Though the imperial court was under the political sway of the warrior government and also relied on the warrior government's financial support, the two emperors I'm showing you on the screen who reigned during this first 14 years of the 17th century, Go-Yōzei on to your left and Go-Mizunoo to your right, these emperors are recognized for their efforts to revive imperial prestige by invoking the heydays of imperial rule of the 9th to 11th centuries, especially through poetry and court ceremony. This is a time when it was very active. In particular, a noted increase of formal poetry gatherings and poetry matches during these emperors' times underscores the promotion of poetry as official activities among courtiers. These were occasions in which poetry was judged and commented upon, and the poets were sized up against nearly a millennium of history. And as we shall see, court rank and family lineage dictated the seating arrangement at these events and demonstrate the highly politicized nature of what in today's eyes might appear as entertainment. The pair of screens, which split the 36 poets into two groups of 18 poets each, is also framed as a poetry match. But the placement, postures, gestures, and glances of the poets suggest something more. In my lecture today, I would like to suggest that when placed in context, the composition almost demands a physical body to be placed in between, that the poets are here summoned by an imperial presence, which is rather a far-out idea, actually, but ta-da. First, let me acquaint you with the literary and pictorial history of the 36 poets and familiarize you with the conventions that set the stage for the screens. In order to demonstrate that that the certain aspect of the arrangement and the articulation of the 36 poets, as you have been seeing, it's historically based. The 36 poets come from different eras, spanning the 7th to 10th centuries, It includes, among the majority are male poets, courtiers, poets, but there's also two monks, and there are five poetesses, including a priestess, Saigu, and four educated ladies-in-waiting at the court. And ladies-in-waiting are daughters of courtiers, and so they're not just servants, but they're educated beings themselves. These 36 poets were celebrated poets during their lifetime, but it was thanks to their selection by the renowned scholar-poet of the early 11th century, Fujiwara no Kinto, in his selection of 36 poets, that these 36 poets became venerated icons of court poetry, over time recognized with the exalted title of Kasen, which literally means poetic immortals. The impetus for Kinto's selection is believed to be a debate between him and a prince over which of the two poets, Hitomaro or Tsurayuki, was the better one. This chart demonstrates the reception of Kinto's collection in that although his original collection of 150 poems by these poets was not explicitly structured as a poetry match, it came to be couched as one, at least since the late 12th century, when poets were paired in the order in which they appear in the collection, but divided into two teams of the left and the right, beginning with Hitomaro, who heads the left team, and Tsurayuki, who heads the right team. The chart lists the poets according to the teams of the left on the right column, and the right, the poets of the right, on the left column, and this is due to the convention of the 36 poets' pictures, or portraitures, where left is stage left from the poet's perspective. So you're seeing it from the poet's perspective. While Kinto's anthology dates from the early 11th century, the pictorial representation of the 36 poets come later. In fact, nearly two centuries later, prompted by a new interest in portraiture. It is therefore a posthumous imaginary group portrait bringing together poets from different eras. The formula of the 36 poets portraiture is of a portrait, as you see here, and combined with their one verse, one poem, which you see inscribed here, and the name of the poet. So that's the formula, those three elements. Prior to their representation on the screen format, the 36 poets appeared first in the format of a hand scroll on the on the right and later on wooden plaques on the left. Both the hand scroll and the plaque capture the idea of a match in ways appropriate to their form and mode of viewing and installation. For instance, a late 13th century hand scroll version is known from a few fragments of the original scroll and also by two very close later copies. I'm showing you an example of a 19th century copy. And before they were immortalized and assumed this quasi-deified status, the 36 poets were aristocrats and members of the imperial court. So the convention is to represent them as courtly portraits dressed in courtly garb. As you can see, there is considerable emphasis on the garments they wear, and it's a very two-dimensional representation. And there's a focus on the garments because that's they denote rank and status. But you also notice that if the garments seem rather stiff to you, the faces are rendered much more delicately. And this is a practice that is based on the portrait tradition, what is called nisei, or likeness pictures, which is a mode of portraiture that emerged in the 13th century, which inserts delicately rendered faces into stylized two-dimensional bodies, which is essentially all robe. And here, too, the names of the figures are also inscribed as well, in addition to the portraits. But you can see that the robes are the same, but their faces capture the likeness of each individual. In the case of the 36 poet hand scroll, the poets are represented sitting at regular intervals, occupying their own spatial clusters. It is more of a string of individual portraits than a carefully integrated group portrait. And there is interest in distinguishing the figures by making them engaged in various modes of contemplation. You see some poets looking down or looking up, engaged in thinking about their verse. But it's a very subtle difference between the figures. The hand scroll format is viewed from the right to the left, following the norm of poetry matches, which is in turn reflective of the greater prestige assigned to the ministers of the left in the political system. Poets of the left are represented first, with their bodies facing left, followed by the poets of the right, with their bodies facing right. Although some poets of the left here turn their faces back as if in acknowledgement of the preceding poet, the bodies of the poets face the center of the scroll, emphasizing the idea of a meeting between the two sides. So within the temple format of the hand scroll, it captures the concept of the left versus right in a single scroll. But because of the way that it's viewed, it's done in this style. At the beginning of the 15th century, the 36 poets come to be represented on plaques of painted wood that were donated as offerings to shrines and temples. The origin of this practice is not clear, but it was an important step towards further deification, celebration, and commemoration of the 36 poets. Dedicatory inscriptions on the plaques indicate that among wishes for prosperity and the elimination of thieves, they were donated as offerings for success in classical poetry and by warriors also for victory at battle. This sheds light on the magical potency of poetry. The late 13th century hand scroll's configuration of the two facing teams was adapted for early votive plaques, which the style I'm showing you on the right. It groups several poets at a time on a set of horizontal planks, which is imitative of the hand scroll progression. Here on the left is an example of this horizontal format, incidentally featuring inscriptions of poems by the same calligrapher of the screens, demonstrating how this calligrapher, Nobutada, had many occasions to brush the poetry of the 36 poets. It was a very popular topic, and in addition to these plaques that were dedicated, the 36 poems were often brushed as calligraphy models. So we have many examples by this particular courtier, Nobutada. So it's no doubt due to the fame as a master calligrapher that he had these occasions to brush them. The other common style represents the 36 poets I'm showing on the right individually and in upright plaques, such as the example on the right. This is one of a set of 36 plaques produced as a group, and these individual portraits were hung collectively, as in the example in the Philadelphia Museum of Art. What you see here also is that a new convention associated with the wooden plaque format, where squares for inscribing poetry are placed near the top register, and the 36 poets customarily sit on tatami mats, the green mats represented here. And each below his or her poem inscribed on a palm sheet placed along the top of the frame. The iconography, the figures, the postures and the gestures of the poets generally follow the conventions established in earlier examples. Just as that hand scroll ordered the poets in the direction that the scroll would have been viewed, the plaques arrange the poets radiating outward in accordance with the ways in which it would have been seen. So you see the first poet paired, and then the second poet and the third poet sort of radiating outward in this fashion. Typically, these plaques are hung along the wall just below the ceiling in the worship hall at a shrine or temple. And starting with the head poets Hitomaro and Tsurayuki at the center, the plaques radiate outward along the wall to the left and the right. And again, this is as viewed from the poet's perspective. So here is the center, and I'm showing you plaques of the left team, which is from their perspective aligned along this way. And on the other side of the wall, you would see the poets of the right. Some of the poets' heads may face left or right, but most of their bodies are angled towards the other team, reiterating a notion of an imaginary meeting between the two teams of the left and right. And here they meet across the room, so to speak. The plaque introduced the 36 poets to a wider audience, since unlike the hand scrolls, which are more suited for private consumption, the plaques could be seen in the semi-public precincts of shrines and temples. Contemporary diaries often mention dedication ceremonies of these plaques, suggesting that the 36 poets had also become, in a sense, a religious spectacle in some respect. Placed along this trajectory, it becomes clear that the poets' screens capitalize on the folding screen format, which usually come in pairs of two halves. Whereas the hand scrolls and plaques align the poets in a straight line, the screens have the two groups share the same space, each poet shown in three-quarter view and inclined towards the other screen. The choice of the paired screen format, then, is an elegant pictorial solution for designating the classic teams of the left and the right. The poets of the left appear on your right, and the poets of the right appear to your left. I think I've said it enough times that you've got it. Okay. The screens are staged as a contest between the two sides, facing off as they would in an actual poetry match. But with no tatami mats depicted within the pictorial field, the poets appear just opposite the viewer, and the effect of their occupying recessed space is even stronger when the screens are standing with folds open. Now I'd like to show you how the iconography of these poets largely follow the conventions found in the hand scroll and plaques, but with important modifications. One such modification is in their gaze. Most of the male poets direct their gazes squarely on the other team. Even when their gestures are contemplative and following an established pose, with a hand to the chin or to the cheek, for example, this gesture of contemplation, you see that their eyes, their gazes are strictly directed to the other's head, directed ahead. So with this modification, the poets appear less contemplative, in fact, imparting a temporal and spatial collectivity, sort of in that moment, sharing that moment together, a sense of the poets giving their full attention to the other team, as if in a poetry match. The sense of immediacy is heightened by the open mouths of some of the poets of the left's team, I'm showing you in brackets. The idea of a poetry match is further cued by the first two poets, Hitomaro and Tsurayuki, facing off where the right and left screens meet. And their special statuses as head poets is underscored by their poems inscribed a full character lower than the rest. The deference to the left side is proclaimed by the notation left that precedes Hitomaro's poem, and also by Nobutada setting off the first five syllables of his poem. Classical Japanese is read from the right to the left, so this is where the poem begins. And you can see that it's written in separation, and this is a technique literally called writing in separation. And by making these syllables stand out from the rest of the poems, which are inscribed in this fluid, continuing mode of calligraphy, inscription, where the letters flow from one another to the next without pause, the calligrapher, Nobutada, cues the viewer to the starting point of this poetry match that is enacted before your eyes. The poems, which are inscribed across the upper half of the screen in two to three lines each, are, and it's in the conventional order of the poets. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to 18 on the left, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to 18 on the right team. So the numbers act as locators for the remaining poets. So we know that it starts here. These are the first poets, and then the rest is there. The poets are staggered, forming rows that produce a loose semicircle of male poets. So this is poet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And on the left screen, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so you have this sense of a very general semicircle like that, which then changes the characterization, my characterization a little bit, because this makes it into an assembly in which the head poets are not at the center, but they're actually at the front of their respective teams. And this arrangement, this particular arrangement here, makes it appear that the five female poets are placed farther into space beyond the semicircle of men, which literary scholar Joshua Mastow has characterized as, I quote, scattered in the background, rendered marginal, unquote. This arrangement is at least in part prompted by the screen format and the representation of poets as occupying this collective integrated space. Now, looking at the screen, this characterization by Professor Mastow at first seemed reasonable, but also to me, but also prompted the question of what was the reasoning behind this specific arrangement? Why the semicircle and why female poets in the back? It was not until I came across records of 17th century poetry matches and poetry gatherings which shed light on this particular arrangement and suggested the possibility that the imaginary poetry match enacted in the screens in fact mirrored actual poetry events. This is a document of a slightly later date than the screens. It shows a diagram of seating arrangements. And this is a manuscript titled Records of Poetry Matches of the Kan'e Era, between the time between 1624 and 44. This event was hosted by the retired Emperor Gomizu No'o, Nobutada's nephew, in his Hiro Palace sometime between 1632 and 1640, and I'm getting this thanks to the ranks of some of the poets that are represented here. The drawing shows the retired emperor at his place at the very front, who naturally served as the host and assumed the honored place of the first poet of the left. So you see here that there's nine poets of the left team here because the retired emperor is the first poet. And then there are 10 poets on the right team. And this diagram also shows that the poets of the left are to his left, and the poets of the right are to his right. And this is a little bit of a grainy image, but I wanted to show you, sort of make it a little bit more direct for you. If we were to imagine the diagram placed on its side, and this is a 19th century rendering of court ceremony, but we see here the emperor seated, and in his back the screens, to a pair of screens. We see the seat for the reciter, and then we see the poets lined up, just as it says in the diagram. Also, the diagram talks about bamboo blinds being drawn right here, the bamboo blinds being drawn in front of the emperor, for example. And this image, it's not clear, but there are bamboo blinds drawn here, and the bamboo blinds look like this when they're rolled up. Here is a more detailed translation of that particular diagram. And the participants of this event comprise the main poets of Gomizu No'o's poetry circle, ordered by status and rank, with the highest noblemen seated closest to the retired emperor. As their life dates show, and I know it's probably very difficult to sort of just quickly scan the life dates, but it shows that the order is not dictated by seniority, age, but by rank, and courtiers of certain families had significant advantage in terms of rank and promotion. For example, our calligrapher, Nobutada, was born to one of the five families that had rights to become chancellor, the highest position at the court bureaucracy, and since entering the court at age 12, Nobutada rapidly rose among the ranks and had his first opportunity to become chancellor at the age of 20. You know, many of you in the room, students, your age. But he was thwarted by a political rival, the hegemon Toyotomi Hideyoshi, who managed to become adopted into Nobutada's family, the Konoe family, to assume this position. This is a gripping story of its own, but it's for another occasion. But it serves to show that heritage mattered greatly. This is further illustrated by the fact that on the left team, two princes, Toshitada and Ryojo, follow the emperor. They're his emperor's brothers. And only then the palace minister is seated here. The second poet on the right, Konoe Nobuhiro, is Nobutada's nephew and a younger brother of the emperor. And the emperor's brother is seated here. another brother, so all brothers here, who became our calligrapher Nobutada's adopted son and 18th heir to the Konoe line. The diagram shows the retired emperor seated in front of a pair of six-fold screens. If we imagine the two halves of the poet screens flanking the emperor, as I propose, this places the head poets closest to him, and importantly, the poets of the left and the right correctly to his left and right. So when considered in context, then, the left poets are looking at the left poets and the right poets are looking at the right poets, so there's a real mirror image going on between the two sides of the past and the present, the represented and the actual living human beings. Although it often goes out without mention, poetry events were performances centered on the recitation of poetry and governed by ceremonial procedures, many influenced by religious ritual. The preparation of a gathering involved required objects, such as the central icon that is represented here in this particularly famous image. This detail is from a 14th century illustrated hand scroll, and this scene is cited over and over again, because it famously shows the portrait of Hitomaro, who is our portrait, the first poet of the left team, hung at such gatherings. So before the 36 poets came to be represented, Hitomaro, the first poet, was an acclaimed poet of his own, and he had his own portrait tradition. This happened in 1118, when the first poetry gathering was dedicated to his portrait. And since then, if you were a practitioner of court poetry, you needed to own a portrait of Hitomaro, which you could hang in your room when you also had memorial poetry gatherings for him. So in fact, there are many examples of Hitomaro portraiture that exist today. So since 1818, when memorial poetry gatherings came to be held in honor of Hitomaro's portrait, Hitomaro was transformed from a sage of poetry to a deity of poetry. Articles on poetry etiquette, which is another document I came across, a mid-6th century book of instructions containing nearly 80 passages, gives the details of adorning spaces at poetry gatherings. It says, the first passage on the adornment of the gathering space. It says, place the three objects, flower vase, candle holder, incense burner, at the alcove of the waka gathering. Or at informal gatherings, install only an incense burner or incense container. Here we see the incense burner here, flanked by two vases. There should be flowers in the vase, it says. Appropriate for the central icon are the names of Sumiyoshi or Tamatsushima, who are gods of poetry, or a portrait of Hitomaro, as we see here. In the case of gatherings at the imperial palace, it says, because the emperor takes the place of the icon, the honzon, the main icon, is not necessary. Such poetry gathering manuals confirm the placement of objects in Gomizu no O's event, illustrated here, including the inverted lid of the writing box, which contains the verses written on poem sheets. These poem sheets, the size of these poem sheets differed according to gender and rank, and it was submitted beforehand and placed in front of the central icon. Seated behind this lid, the container, is the reciter, diagonally flanked by two scribes. So reciter and scribe. At poetry gatherings, poems were composed beforehand on a pre-circulated topic and inscribed on poem sheets, the submission of which was an important ritual step of the gathering. The poems and names of poets were first announced by the reciter, then sung in unison by the other select participants, inviting the possibility that the open mouths of some of the poets in the screens denote this performance. The red line here also marks the paths the poets of the two teams followed before taking their places. So it's a very ritual-oriented, performance-oriented gathering. The diagram also helps to explain the position of the poetesses in the poet screens. In the adjacent room here, To the left of the emperor's seat are the notations, bamboo blinds hung across, and crowd of listening ladies in waiting, indicating that women were in attendance but behind bamboo blinds. The notations situate the women in a separate space, but closer to the emperor, much like that of the screens, if we are to imagine an imperial presence at the center. Furthermore, if we take a closer look at the poetesses, they cast their gazes downward. Nagatsukasa, who is usually painted on votive plaques looking back at the viewer, appears here in profile in the screen, her head slightly bowed. These gestures impart a sense of deference and modesty, particularly in contrast with the male poets who project forward to the other screen. If we assume the emperor is seated in between, as I propose, the downcast glances of the woman can be read as expressions of respect toward the actual imperial presence, and also to the fifth poet, poetess, Saigu no Nyogo, who is the only poet of imperial rank among the 36 poets. Saigu is often given special treatment behind curtains of state in 36 poets' iconography. Although she is typically represented with part of her head showing, as in these examples, here on the screen, she is completely hidden behind not one but two layers of curtains, bolstering the possibility of an imperial commission that would have expected such attention paid to the priestess. When these poetesses were active during the classical age, which is the Heian period dating from 794 to 1185, talented ladies-in-waiting served as hosts and head poets of poetry gatherings. But the role and place of women at poetry events in the 17th century were quite different. In her study of women at medieval poetry matches and gatherings, literary scholar Tabuchi Kumiko notes that the more official the event, the more strictly the seating arrangement reflected court rank, and that the women at the court, ladies-in-waiting who were mainly daughters of aristocrats, belong to a hierarchy of rank and social standing separate from male courtiers. So in this respect, the positioning of female poets outside the semicircle of the male poets in the poet's screens is in accord with the social reality of the 17th century present when the screens were made. But I don't believe that this merits the characterization that the poetesses are, quote, scattered in the background, rendered marginal, unquote. In fact, compositionally speaking, they are given preferential clarity, unlike most of the male poets who are shown overlapping a teammate. You can really see the poetesses in clear sight. Furthermore, in addition to the particular positioning of the poetesses, a closer look at the poet's screens shows that the other figures are not evenly distributed either, and there is a certain clustering in some areas. For example, here and also right here. Furthermore, the poets indicated in brackets, and there's two poets here, are placed out of order. They don't match. They're not in sync with the poems inscribed above, making clear that there is a logic behind this arrangement that departs from convention. And I believe there's two possible reasons for this rendering. First is familial relations or familial connections. On the right, the exchange of Takamitsu, the eighth poet, and Tadamine, the ninth poet, on the right teen, so instead of 8-9, it's 9-8. This may be attributed to artist error, as both poets are military officials appointed with similar gear, but when we consider how the poets sit in space, this placement puts Tadamine, the poet here, in the same row with his father, Tadami, a familial relationship that appears to be emphasized by the use of blue military official attire for both. Similarly, it is possible to connect other familial relationships with an imaginary straight line within and across screens. Issei and her daughter Nagatsukasa, Sosei and his monk Henjo, the two monks in the painting, Kintada and his son Sane Akira, Kanesuke and his son Kiyotada, and Yorimoto and his son Yoshinobu. The significance of familial ties and underlying marriage politics would not have been lost on the original viewers. Indeed, another look at retired Emperor Gomizuno's poetry match diagram shows Nakanoi Michimura participating with his son Michizumi, Ano Saneaki with his son Kinnari, and Sanjo Nishisane Eda with his grandson Sanenori, and Asakai Masanobu with his brother, Masaaki. And in order to be a reciter, you had to have a really good, beautiful voice, so he must have been quite good. If we imagine courtiers assembled at a poetry gathering looking at the screens, the mirror relationship of the screens make a powerful statement of the longevity of the art of court poetry as embodied by and carried forth through familial successions and function as a confirmation of aristocratic heritage as practiced by those represented and those present. They would bring home the point that, for the original viewers of these screens, the 36 poets were not abstract, immortalized poets, but ancestors and illustrious members of the imperial court. Furthermore, the dialogue between the past and the present that was produced as a result of this mirroring relationship between the poets of the past, viewed by the poets of the present, strikes a delicate balance in the screens between the characterization of the 36 poets as venerated icons on the one hand and celebrated celebrated aristocratic past on the one hand, and also as up-to-date aristocrats dressed rank appropriately for the 17th century present. One such adjustment that conjures the 36 poets in present terms is an introduction of an entirely contemporary object, the chuke fan, the contemporary in the 17th century sense, to the composition. The chuke fan, which literally means middle opened, where the upper part of the half, the fan is open even when it's folded. This is found in portraits of emperors, courtiers, and warriors in the 16th to 17th centuries. This is Emperor Goyoze with his chuke fan, and this is an Ashikaga warrior with his chuke fan. Introduction of this contemporary element, or any contemporary customs of the time of the painting, is actually not unusual in the convention of 36 poet portraiture, but the presence and emphasis of the chuke fan here, particularly when in contrast to the muted representation of the cypress fan, which is represented here, not open, but folded. This is the usual signifier of the past, but it is folded and sort of downplayed. This is shown in front of the poetesses Issei and Komachi. Komachi usually has a fully open fan in front of her. So I believe that this makes the poets more compellingly in the moment as carrying the same accessory as some of the actual guests in the room, or the poets in the room. For the most part, the costumes worn by the poets of the screen are also rank appropriate for the early 17th century court. Densely patterned but solid black formal cloaks, we see a cluster here, are worn by courtiers of the fourth rank and above. Poets of the rank, a lower rank of the fifth, are appointed with what is called a hunting cloak, which is distinguished by open shoulders. And this had become a formal garb. It was originally more of a relaxed outfit, but it became a formal garb by the 17th century for courtiers as well as warriors of elevated rank. And I would like to also draw your attention to the fact that they're not only these poets are dressed quite formally, but they're also seated with a ceremonious dignity. And this upright posture with a fan held at the waist, as all these poets are demonstrating, this appears to have been a very formal posture of the time, as indicated by numerous contemporary renditions. Very formal portraits, for example. The other men of the screens who wear hunting cloaks but do not sit in this formal pose have classic iconographical identities, really images that really allow the viewer to identify immediately who this poet is. For example, Tomonori, one of the poets, sit with his hands clasped. Sane Akira has his hands pressed against his left cheek, and I'm showing you a plaque example to illustrate that. Shigeyuki has his chin resting against a scepter, a folded fan, rather, I'm sorry. And Shigeyuki, with his hand to his chin, or right sleeve to his face, rather. In the screens, these figures appear strategically tucked away and placed out of order and tucked away behind formally posed poets as if to de-emphasize their unique postures. And this is an example of Sane Akira. Okikaze. And in some instances, this affects the order of the poets, indicating that a stately assembly of the 36 poets was a stronger concern for the screens than gathering the poets in a traditional order. And just a few examples to illustrate this point further, this courtier, Atsutada, is usually represented with his hand to his forehead, but here you don't even see his hands, and he's also, again, placed out of order, sandwiched between two other poets. And this is the famous poet Narihira. Well, all 36 poets are famous, but particularly popular because he is the supposed protagonist of a famous tale. He is in order. He is the fourth poet, but his pose is changed. He's not. He doesn't have his hand to his chin, but rather he's again upright and looking straightly ahead. He's not contemplating about a verse, but he's looking ahead. In a comparison with another set of screens of the 36 poet of a later date than our screen today, this is attributed to an artist by the name of Iwasa Matabe, and in the collection of the Iremitsu Museum of Arts in Tokyo. It brings the distinction in full relief. In the Iremitsu screens, the poets are arranged in the conventional order, and they are placed adjacent to the poems, which are inscribed within poetry sheets. Their poses also follow established iconography of the hand scrolls and the plaques. As you can see, some have their backs facing towards us, and others with bodies bowed in contemplation, or in this case, poet is looking upward. In contrast, the poet screens then tweak the postures to recreate that more formal group portrait of a live official match. So then, what was the reason for this artistic license? Since the 12th century, it was the custom. And as we learn from the mid-16th century articles on poetry etiquette, a requirement to hang an image or a calligraphy inscription as the central image at poetry events. Also, the articles on poetry etiquette declare that when the emperor is present, he becomes that icon, and the object icon is not necessary. If we look at the poetry match diagram, it also shows the screens being a temporary surround of the emperor, demarcating his exalted position from his audience. So considering all these records together, I would like to suggest that the poet screens served a triple purpose: as a main icon of a poetry event, as a backdrop for the emperor as main icon, and as a mirror image or reenactment of a poetry match. If the emperor himself was the central icon, then the 36 poets are his illustrious attendants. It's very much like a Buddhist icon with a central icon with his attendants. And a hint at the pageantry of the live poetry matches appears in a diary entry by Nobutada's adopted son, Nobuhiro, that records the ceremonial procedures of an official poetry match that took place in 1639. He notes that after the retired emperor was seated, the bamboo blinds obscuring him from view were ceremoniously lifted. And there was a courtier who was in charge of that particular raising of the blinds. Had the poetry screens been used in such a setting, the seated emperor, flanked by respectfully reduced but impressively large figures of the most renowned poets of Japanese court poetry under tour de force calligraphy, would have been a sight to behold. Indeed, the 36 poets appear to be seated with the utmost respect towards the only figure with the rightful privilege to summon the most celebrated poets of the ages. Thank you very much.